How do we deal with those moments when we're doing tedious tasks that we know long-term might be rewarding, but are certainly the opposite feeling of rewarding in the moment? How can we be productive or successful in a non-emergency situation when we have an ADHD brain?
Hey, yo, busy brain. Welcome to my podcast. I am Camden Hainsworth, ADHD advocate, coach, and member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Understanding my own ADHD diagnosis completely changed the course of my life for the better. Now it is my mission and joy to provide you with the tools to do the same. Join me weekly. Let's create real results that work with your neurodivergence and reflect a confident life of self-acceptance, growth, and satisfaction. Welcome to the Busy Brain Saint podcast. Let's get growing.
Hello, you made it. I am so happy that you are here. My brain is busy and my heart is full. Today's podcast episode is titled Non-Emergency Success. If you have ADHD, you probably already know what I'm talking about. We do really, really well in crisis. We keep our cool. We're able to get things done. In fact, it almost feels like living in crisis mode is easier at times than living in boring, non-eventful, nothing's on fire mode. And if that is relatable to you, you're in really good company with this podcast. Oftentimes with my clientele, they'll ask me, how can I just pretend like everything is on fire, everything is urgent, everything's been procrastinated so that I can actually get things done? Because time has told me that when the pedal is to the metal, when it's time to get into action, when the clock is running out, that's when I do my best work. And while that may be true, and while at times I think that it's completely okay for us to use procrastination as a tool in our life, so long as it's on purpose, intentional, we can't often operate our entire life by living with that urgency and procrastination. I sometimes will record these podcast episodes one day before the publishing day or even the morning of. And I give myself a little bit of flexibility with that because I have a busy life and I know that that's just kind of what makes sense for my life. But at other times, if I'm constantly running with my adrenals on fire, I'm going to start to experience some negative repercussions for running off of adrenaline. This is really familiar to me because I feel like that's how I spent the first 6-7 years of my motherhood, and most definitely the first 3 or 4 years. I was in so much of a fight and flight. I was not sleeping. I remember, and I've talked about this before, going to doctor after doctor to help my undiagnosed ADHD kids be evaluated because they weren't sleeping, and because they both weren't sleeping, I wasn't sleeping. When I wasn't sleeping, and yet I was still exercising a lot, I was still trying to navigate my life as though nothing was different. I was pushing myself to a level that I couldn't deal with anymore. And I'll never forget finally being heard by a sleep specialist doctor, and I was weeping and telling her, I don't know what else to do. And she finally listened and we're finally able to get my daughter medication so that she could sleep, so that I could sleep. And it made the world of a difference. I could feel the difference in my body. In fact, it was kind of strange that once I started sleeping, I actually felt more tired because that adrenaline wasn't pumping through my body. But the long-term consequences of helping myself navigate life when it wasn't on fire were much more healthy for my system overall. When cortisol levels are constantly high due to chronic stress, which we feel like we totally relish in and succeed in, it can have several negative consequences to our body, to our overall health. We might find that we're getting sick a lot easier because our immunity function isn't doing as well. We can start to gain weight. It's a stress hormone. We can have digestive problems. Obviously, sleep gets interrupted. we can create more mood disorders like anxiety, depression, or other ones. Our cognitive ability becomes lessened, and our heart health can really be impacted by high cortisol levels. So it's really important that we manage stress. We don't want to be living in a life where everything is on fire just so that we can be productive. And so what I do and what I tell my clients when they come to me with this very common idea of like, okay, I just need to pretend like everything is last minute, is urgent, and then I'll actually get it done. What we actually have to lean more into is how to do things when it's not an emergency, how to tolerate how uncomfortable that is, how not fun that is, how boring that is, how understimulating that is. How can we manage that so that we don't have to rely upon our adrenals, our cortisol levels to make us successful? Within the ADHD context, it's really common to hear that the amygdala, which is the part of the brain that addresses our fear response, among many other things, actually has structural and mechanical differences in people with ADHD. So what that means is if we are processing norepinephrine, which is a type of adrenaline released by the nervous system, it's going to do it differently. Okay. So what that means is if we are in a fight or flight response, ADHDers will often feel this very calm sense of peace, even when things are pretty chaotic. Other people who have gone through traumas in the past also sometimes, like, their body is so used to flipping on to that fight or flight response for survival that they know how to, like, manage really tough situations really well. It's very interesting. So this means that a crisis actually calms most people with ADHD down and helps us with our problem solving. And so even though it might be true that this is the case, it's still not a long-term solution. Now, there are particular medications that can increase neurotransmitters or the receptors of norepinephrine, and that's why it does work. Another example of this is I've had clients with ADHD that say when they take particular medications compared to other, like when they take one kind of ADHD medication versus a different medication, some stimulant medications make them feel very, very tired. And we see this also with caffeine, that sometimes kids with ADHD, when they drink caffeine, or adults, it actually calms them, whereas most neurotypicals, when they drink caffeine, it's there to produce more energy for them. So we can see that there are differences in our brain with the way that we use norepinephrine, we navigate crisis mode, and how our brain actually acts when something is or is not on fire. So what happens then when we want to do really boring tasks like go to bed on time or order the groceries or today, what was I doing? Oh my gosh. Today I was moving one of my daughter's dressers from her old room to her new room, and I was doing it alone. And so my brain wanted this to be done quickly, efficiently, blah, blah, blah. And I had to constantly tell it, this is going to take slow. It's not going to be fast. We don't want to ding this dresser, even though we want it to be done fast. It's just not going to be done fast. And so how do we then deal with those moments when we're doing tedious tasks or tasks that we know long-term might be rewarding, but are certainly the opposite feeling of rewarding in the moment? Essentially, how can we be productive or successful in a non-emergency situation when we have an ADHD brain who's very focused on feeling good, getting things done when we feel good?
Summertime and the living's easy.
or you hope it will be. During the spring and the summer, I am extending my one-on-one coaching package to 12 sessions, not just over 4 months, but over 5 months. In addition to that, I support you through the Marco Polo app. Marco Polo is a recording app where you can, and I will respond back in a video. It is literally a coach in your back pocket. So with the flexibility and the needs of summer, with the coming and going, the vacations, the kids here and there, I want to be able to support you and your ADHD brain during this really important time. Not only that, but if you sign up now with me for this 5 month for the price of 4 coaching package, you're going to have support from an ADHD coach, from myself, with the transition from school to summer, with all of the planning for summer, and then the transition again back from summer to back to school. That is like the greatest gift I could give you, if I'm being honest. I know I'm a fan because I created it. I thought it was genius, but this is where people have needed help from me in the past. This is where I've needed my own ADHD coach in the past. And it makes complete sense for you to start now in the spring, to be supported into the transition of summer, to be supported throughout the summer with all the ups and downs and the emotional regulation and the planning and the family and all the things, as well as getting back into systems as the new school year is starting. So I hope that you book your free discovery call with me so we can talk this out. I already have a really good feeling that if you've been listening to this podcast, we'd be a great fit. And I cannot wait to meet you. I can't wait to hear about your goals. And let's get on top of your ADHD brain right now. Hope to see you soon. I want to take us to the scriptures first. And in the New Testament, there's a beautiful story of the women with an issue of blood in Mark 5, 25 through 34. So the woman has suffered from a chronic illness for 12 years, causing her not only the physical pain, but societal pain and emotional distress, cultural impurities associated with her condition. All of these things are working against her. And yet she musters up the courage and the strength in all of that pain and all of what she's navigating to touch Jesus's garment because she believes in his healing power, and she was healed immediately. Jesus in that moment says, "Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague." So here's a beautiful example of someone who really wasn't feeling great and wasn't feeling sustained and was feeling very dismissed even by society and culturally, and who still mustered up the courage in that discontentment to do something that impacted her entire life. And this is an interesting way to think about it, because her faith and her hope, I wonder what the hope may have felt as an emotion in her body. So when we are coaching, we put like feeling hope in the situation line, and her thought, you know, is something like, this could change the rest of my life. And so then in her emotion line, maybe she's feeling optimistic. She's feeling motivated. Even though physically and societally, whatever that is, she may be feeling outcast, not heard, not seen, in pain. Both of those feelings can exist at the same time. With ADHD, a lot of the time, what feels so incredible, and we talked about this when we talked about hyperfocus, we use that addictive and euphoric kind of feeling or adjectives to describe it. We know what it feels like to get into hyperfocus and to get things done, that it's often so hard to break away from that our expectations aren't always healthy as to what it needs to feel like in order to get things done. The bottom line is getting to bed on time requires some steps, maybe brushing your teeth, getting into pajamas, maybe putting your kids to bed, especially if it's really cold upstairs during the winter or downstairs or in a different room. Anything like that really adds to the fuel of this is really uncomfortable. Now, the woman with the issue of blood obviously was in discomfort. And to compare her to the boredom or understimulation of not wanting to brush our teeth may seem a little bit intense. So let's have another really intense example from the scriptures, because why not? The second thought I had was Joseph Smith in Liberty Jail and how absolutely terrible those conditions were, how he couldn't stand up, how the guards were talking about really evil and nasty things, how he was being fed like moldy and just terrible food. And he cried out to God and he said, "Oh God, where art thou?" And God answered and said, "For a small moment, you're going to be suffering. And then will you get the eternal blessings?" So this idea of being patient in tribulation and still being able to take steps forward, that even when we're in the most uncomfortable situation, we can still be progressing. We can still be making progress that we can't see. This is really, really hard for us that struggle with our working memory, that struggle to be reflective about what we're actually doing in life. Being able to tap into what our future self wants in a moment of understimulation and discomfort is really, really difficult. In fact, I would say it's like feels impossible. But when we're developing self-trust in a good moment, for example, right now I'm feeling pretty good. I'm warm. I had a good lunch. I have hydrated today. My daughter's asleep. Like, I'm having a good moment. So in this moment, setting my goals and thinking about, okay, what is it that I really want to improve on in my life? Now is a good time to set up structures and to prepare myself for the moments when I'm not going to have as much capacity. So if we're talking about going to bed early, or we're talking about brushing our teeth, for example, if that's something that you struggle with, the person I am now is who my future self in a lower capacity can trust, because the structures I'm going to set up now are going to help them in the future. So how do we deal with success? How do we get success from a non-emergency perspective? We plan for it, and then we make experiments, and we understand that we're going to have to tolerate a lot of discomfort. We're going to have to exercise patience in tribulation. We're going to have to reach out to the hem of the garment, even when we are not feeling great. And time after time, that's going to start to build evidence for our brain that we can do things even when we don't feel good about it. And that feels kind of backwards for us. Our brain is interest-based. We have an interest-based brain with ADHD. My husband will go do something even if it's not his favorite thing, because he doesn't have an interest-based brain. He just knows that's what needs to get done. So for us, we really have to be active about tolerating the discomfort. What are going to be the long-term effects if we decide that we can only do things that feel really good in our body? Which is the lie that ADHD tells us? You cannot be successful. You cannot get things done unless you have enough neurotransmitters in your brain to make you feel good about it. And so that's once again why we take medication. But there are other times when we can also trust ourselves, because we're coaching ourselves. And that's the power of learning how to emotionally regulate ourselves regardless of how our ADHD brain is showing up. Once again, I'm going to go back to this dresser today. I love that this happened today because, well, it also happened yesterday. We were bringing some furniture downstairs and I just kept saying out loud, this is going to be tedious and awkward and heavy and slow, and it will still only take us less than 3 minutes. I know that it feels like we should be able to move this piece of furniture faster because we're both capable, healthy, wonderful people. Yesterday, my husband was helping me. But I don't care if it's under 3 minutes or if it's under 1 minute. In the grand scheme of things, that's fast enough. So instead of taking 50 big steps with this piece of furniture, I'm going to probably have to take 300 little steps. And that's going to feel tedious and terrible. And then I ask myself, am I willing to do that? To get this done within 5 minutes, under 5 minutes? And the answer is a resounding absolutely yes. But my brain doesn't think of that naturally. That was my coaching brain that I had to put on. That is my self-trust brain that I have learned to develop. Because my ADHD brain goes straight into, you need to go faster. This is taking too long. Why are you trying to do all this by yourself? This is so annoying. We wish we could get this project done sooner, yada, 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 yada. And it's not helping me. In the end, I end up what? More restless, more full of anxiety, more depressed, in indecision, in analysis paralysis. And I don't want to go there because I got some great things to do. I got some fun projects that I'm working on. So when it comes to success with non-emergency situations, situations where something isn't on fire, I hope you're hearing over and over again, it comes to tolerating the discomfort, doing the thing bored, doing the thing uncomfortable, doing the thing even in pain. It can feel so painful. And then gathering that evidence over time that I can do things. Even when it's very boring, I can do things. I can break tasks down. We can get into some solutions. I can break tasks down even when they're not exciting. Okay. It's worth slowing down. It's worth working on this while things aren't on fire for my general health overall. I do not have to wait until something is on fire. It doesn't have to feel satisfying in order for it to get done. Okay, there's a lot of really great mantras that you can adopt. Essentially, some things is to gain some clarity. With the dresser, as soon as I could feel my body getting annoyed with the situation, I knew it needed attention. So I said, "Oh, I see you, ADHD. I see that this is too tedious. I know that that's what you're trying to tell me as truth, but it doesn't actually matter. What actually matters is that I get this dresser moved, and let's look at the reality of the situation. Let's get clear on the goal. If I take 300 steps and I'm still able to get it done under 5 minutes, is it worth it? Absolutely. And it took even shorter than that. Routines can be really helpful. I don't even think about brushing my teeth anymore because I've been doing it since I was like, I can't even remember. But every night I put my pajamas on, I brush my teeth, I wash my face. Unless I'm not wearing makeup that day, then I give myself a choice. And then I get into bed and then I get interrupted about 18 more times by my kids. But that, all of those things are chunked together and it's a routine. So now there isn't any drama associated with my brain because it's essentially the same thing. Pajamas, face washing, and teeth brushing are the same action. Can you eliminate distractions? Can you break tasks down into smaller tasks? Can you take breaks so that you have more energy? All of these things can help us while we're trying to tolerate negative emotions, because then we're spending less time trying to manage our brain that keeps looking at the TV because it's on or keeps scrolling on our phone because it's there. Less energy expended in the buffering, more energy expended in the doing. So I know these are just normal things that you've probably heard of a million times, and yet we still do them. When I was growing up, I think it was President Hinckley talked a lot about self-mastery. And there's probably a lot of different thoughts and ideas about what self-mastery is. But what I also love that he and President Faust drove home a lot is that self-mastery actually works hand in hand with forgiveness. In order to become masters of ourselves and understand what our body needs and what our individualized brain needs, which is like an ADHDer knows what an ADHDer's brain needs, right? A neurotypical knows what a neurotypical brain needs. But the more that we understand that, we're going to have to actually be willing to fail, be willing to not succeed, be willing to do it wrong, in order for ourselves to become masters of that thing. The same way a tennis player has to make mistakes in order to improve their tennis game. My husband was watching the Masters this past weekend. All of those golfers have had to fail over and over and over again in order to become masters at the Masters, right? They have had to do that. And so many of us are unwilling to try to do a thing with discomfort, try to do the thing from boredom, try to do the thing understimulated, that we never get a chance to show ourselves that we can become masterful. We have to be able to forgive ourselves, right? We have to be able to let it go, to have compassion with ourselves, to take away the guilt, to take away the shame that is coming from who knows what sources in order for us to progress. You're noticing probably by now that a lot of the helpful tools for me is cognitive reframing. Noticing a trigger, noticing my body starting to get mad at itself, notice my brain starting to get mad at my body that it can't work the way that the brain wants, and then saying, wait a second, hold the show. Is this actually acceptable? Is this actually attainable? And most of the time, it's not. Most of the time, it's a total lie what my brain is coming up with. And so my body has to remind my brain, hey, thanks for the idea. I'm actually a human. So we're going to have to take it at a different pace. And so that cognitive reframing of what's actually happening, what reality is very, very helpful. Then I'm not chasing after an unrealistic expectation that wouldn't even be able to be managed or accomplished by Superman, right? I'm managing myself in a way that is healthy, that is compassionate, and that is kind. That is manageable over time. That is not going to lead me to burnout. That is not going to lead me to adrenal fatigue. That is not going to make me run off of intense adrenaline for the rest of my life and have my cortisol levels off, you know, off the charts. That's going to be sustainable. And in this podcast and in all of my coaching and in all of the ADHD work that we do, we are looking for sustainable, lasting, long-term, reasonable expectations for our life. We allow ourselves to hate it. We allow ourselves to tolerate it. We allow ourselves to be annoyed with it. When something is not an emergency, when things feel kind of ick, and then most of the time, we have a much higher likelihood that we'll actually get the thing done. Know how much I love you, and I'm always, always cheering you on. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Busy Brained Saint podcast. If you're eager to explore the world of ADHD coaching, make sure to connect with me on Instagram at Camden_ADHD or visit my website, CamdenADHDCoaching.com. For more LDS-specific ADHD content, don't forget to follow this podcast and join us on Instagram at The Busy Brained Saint. Listen, I'm here to support you on your journey. I cannot wait to have you as a part of our community. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and remember, you're not alone here. Thanks for being a part of the Busy Brained Saint family.